views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Whether you feel like your life is crumbling around you or your greatest dreams are just within your grasp, you're on the verge of your next best thing. When certified hypnotherapist and master life coach Laura Richer found herself on the verge, instead of having a breakdown, she used it as a way to break through and truly transform her life. Now she works with people every day, helping them to do the same. Tune in to Laura's hit new show, On the Verge Radio, to learn how you can use your breakdown for a breakthrough.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to On the Verge Radio. We're broadcasting here on Transformation Talk Radio. I am your co-host, Andy Lucas, and I'm here with host Laura Richer.
Hi, Andy. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in today. We have a very exciting show.
Yes, we do. Laura is a certified hypnotherapist, a master life coach, and she is the owner of Seattle Healing Hypnotherapy, Reiki, and Life Coaching. And in our past episodes, we've been talking about toxic relationships. The first one is kind of with yourself. Then we talked about toxic relationships at work. And then our last episode, we talked about toxic love relationships. Well, today, we do not plan to leave you hanging. After you have identified and let go of that toxic relationship, what happens next? And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
So we have a very exciting guest coming to visit us for the second half to give us some expert dating advice. Yes. Dr. Pepper Schwartz is going to be here. And if you are not familiar with Dr. Pepper Schwartz, she is a sociology professor at the University of Washington, and she has had a 40-year-long career as an expert in love and commitment and relationships. And she is also one of the experts on our favorite reality show, Married at First Sight.
Ooh,
so
yes.
We are so excited to have her in the studio with us today.
Yeah, she'll be offering up a lot of advice on dating and finding love and maintaining those love relationships. So please stay tuned for that. So what did Foxy Brown say about dating?
I think she said, to find a prince, you have to kiss a lot of toads.
And you know what? I have kissed a lot of toads. Like many of you listening, Laura and I both did the dating thing for a while. Mm-hmm. We were in the trenches.
4 to 5 years.
Exactly. And a lot of it was fun. Some of it maybe
wasn't.
Exactly. And it took us each down a path, I think, where we were able to kind of identify what do we not want and clarify what we did want.
Yes.
Or do want.
So that's why we wanted to share some of our experiences with you today and what we learned along the way so that dating doesn't have to be terrible. And it can actually be a lot of fun.
It can be fun. So we know that there's like more than 10 dating apps out there, and it can kind of feel overwhelming. It can be disappointing. It can feel like a second job. So,
yes.
Laura, can you, if you don't mind, share with us your post-divorce dating experiences?
Yes, I would love to. So in case you missed any of our past episodes, you can go to ontheverge.com and
ontheverge.radio.com
and hear those. And we talked about toxic love relationships. So sometimes when you're post-divorce, you're just maybe right out of a toxic love relationship or at least one that wasn't working out. And for me, when I got divorced, I moved back to Seattle, which is my hometown. I'd been living away for 10 years, and I just really needed to take some time to process everything that had happened to me. Plus, I decided to start a business during that time. But I was reluctant to do that and to put that work in, and I just kind of was looking for a Band-Aid. I wanted a distraction, something that would keep me from dealing with some of the negative emotions I was experiencing. So I started dating during that time, which in hindsight might have not have been the best time to start dating.
It happens.
Yes. And what I found in that experience, because I was kind of coming from a place of feeling a little bit wounded, is that I connected with a lot of other wounded people, people that were recently divorced, people that were maybe not quite ready to date yet either. So not that those experiences were necessarily bad, but it wasn't the right time to find a really healthy relationship. And I think we just want to point that out because sometimes it does take some time to get over something. And if it's not working for you right now, it may be that there's some other things you need to do for yourself.
Absolutely. Rachel Machacek, I'm not going to say her name right, but she's the author of The Science of Single, One Woman's Grand Experience in Modern Dating, Creating Chemistry and Finding Love. And she said something that I think is really poignant for this. She said, "I believe with all my heart that the cliches are true, that we are our own best friends and best company, and that if you're not right for yourself,
it's impossible to be right for anyone else.
Yes, absolutely.
And that really goes to what you're saying. You were processing a 10-year marriage, and so how are you going to find somebody right away who's going to be the ideal person because you weren't?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that it's good just to be gentle with ourselves and realize that sometimes we're working on other things and that that's okay. Some other mistakes that I made when I was dating is I really kind of had a time limit in mind. I thought I needed to meet someone before I turned 40. I'm not sure exactly what I thought was going to happen when I turned 40, like something was going to, big weight was going to come fall out of the sky and knock me on the head or something. But because of that, I think it kind of pushed me into some situations that really didn't work for me, but I had put this limitation on myself. So I was trying to be more open-minded.
Yeah.
And that maybe wasn't necessarily the best way to go about it. And I see that for clients too. And sometimes my clients are even really young. They might still be in their 20s and they feel this sense of panic. So I just think it's important to remember that things happen at the right time. They're, you know, people find love in their 70s and 80s. Like you don't have to put a time limit on anything. You're never too old.
Right. When it's right, it's right.
Yeah.
Well, you did a cleanse, didn't you? And that kind of
helped. I did. I had gone on some disappointing dates and I kind of decided I was over it for a little bit. And I really realized I had gotten into a really happy place in my life. My business was doing well. You know, I have great friends, great relationships with my family. And I just thought, you know, since dating's not really working right now, I want to focus on me. So I did a really strict cleanse, which I don't really recommend for people all the time, but where I just cut out alcohol, sugar, most types of food.
Yeah.
And just wanted to see if I could do that and just really focused on myself for a little while. And after that cleanse, I think I met the person that I'm with now maybe a week or two after that, after I finished doing
that.
So
that's, well, tell us about him and why you think that relationship works.
Well, I met him even after the dreaded 40 number.
Oh,
I actually
my God.
Met him when I was 40 and a half. And, you know, in my past, I really found people that were very different from me interesting. So maybe very different backgrounds and values. And even though those people were interesting to me, they were not necessarily people I was compatible with. And that's something that I've kind of learned in my process and my journey about, you know, who the right person would be for me. So my current partner is a guy who has really similar family background to me, same values. We both weirdly get up very early in the morning. So there's a lot of things that we have in common. And it really works. And I also think I met him at a time in my life when I was in a really good place with myself.
And you weren't looking for someone to complete you.
Yes.
You were looking for someone to be a nice compliment
exactly.
to your life that was already going well.
Exactly. So I got to a place where I remember people used to say, oh, you'll meet someone when you don't want to anymore. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm always going to want to meet someone. But I did meet someone when I didn't need to meet them anymore.
Bingo.
It didn't have there was no desperation around it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the D word.
Yeah. So Andy, tell us a little bit about your time in the trenches.
Yeah. And it was the trenches, let me tell you. So on our last episode, we talked about Van Boy, who lives in a van. Not by the river, but
could be the next one.
Yeah, maybe. He lives by the ocean in a van. We had dated for about 4 years. And so right after that, I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to start dating. And I dated a couple people and it was like, this is miserable. I'm still depressed about this. And so I took about 3 years to completely process, heal from that relationship, and really look at what my part was in that toxic relationship, because it was really easy just to point the finger at him, but I absolutely played a part in a lot of it. So by the end of 2015, I legitimately started online dating. I went on a lot of dates that kind of helped me become more discerning. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of just unbelievable things. Scott, and all of the names have been changed to protect the not so innocent. Scott texted me about 45 minutes before our date was to begin, and we were having a Sunday brunch at 2 p.m., and he texted me about 45 minutes ahead and said, you know what, I'm going to have to cancel because I'm on another date right now that is going so well. I just have to see where this is going. And I thought, who books two dates on a Sunday afternoon?
Committed to the process.
Can't fault him for truth right there.
That's right.
I'll give him some truth value
exactly.
there.
Exactly. And I hope that Scott is very happy.
Did you take that personally when that happened to you?
You know, I was finally at a point where I thought, whatever. Now I have Sunday afternoon to myself.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to, like, get all ready and all of that stuff. Then there was Danny, who complained about the traffic. It was our second date, and he was, like, complaining about it. And I had gone across the water for our first date. So I was like, you know what?
just forget it. If I'm ever on your side of the water, I'll give you a call. And then there was Stu, who actually had a friend meet us on the blind date, and actually then needed a ride home, which was wonderful.
So you bring up something interesting. I also went on a date with a guy who brought his friend, and for any of you guys that are listening out there, that's not a great move.
Not good.
Yeah, it's already intimidating to go on a date. You don't need a friend there with you.
It was looming in the sidelines, like just waiting to see if it was going okay. I mean, it was very strange. But I did meet a lot of nice people, and I always went in with an open mind. But what I realized about halfway through this process is that I always went in with this crazy expectation. Is this going to be the one? Is he going to be my new boyfriend? And it was so much pressure on me, on him, on the date, on everything. So I finally just let that go. Mm-hmm. It was like, I can't go in with this kind of pressure. I'm just going for, you know, a fun night. There could be nothing that happens here. This could be a funny story that I tell on a radio show
exactly.
2 years later. Who knows? So I started going in with that, with this kind of zero expectations. And that was in a good way. Mm-hmm. And I met Zach. We're coming up on about a year now. And it's really fantastic. I had, you know, like I said, no expectations. And it went really well. He's, you know, very funny. We have a lot of personality traits that are the same. Kind of that life setup stuff is the same. We're both self-employed. We both have a flair for the dramatic. He's spent a lot of time in theater. We're both fire signs. Neither of us are interested in having children. You know, we're both kind of caring and nurturing animal people. We both need our alone time, but kind of treasure that time together.
So very compatible.
Exactly. And that's something I'd never had before. I had a friend who said to me once, I said, but this guy really likes music. And she said, why don't you try to find someone who has the same values as you, not necessarily the same interests as you. Mm-hmm. And that was like an earth-shattering concept. So, yeah, it's going really well. So super exciting. So after, you know, 4 or 5 years in the trenches, you and I both have found a partner that works for us. Mm-hmm. And I think it was both because we were ready for ourselves. We were ready and complete ourselves.
All right, hang on. Let me stop for a second.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
From a guy's perspective. Please, say that one more time. It's not about interest. It's about what?
Values.
See, guys?
Yes.
There's more than just that. It's outside the box.
Yes. Benny, thank you. I love it.
Just making sure the guys hear this.
Yes. It's very, very true.
Okay.
Yeah. So we are about to take a break, but Laura, please tell everyone how they can get in touch with you at Seattle Healing Hypnotherapy, Reiki, and Life Coaching.
So you can just give us a call at 206-765-8265 or find us at my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. We do offer a 30-minute complimentary consultation. So if you have any questions about how we might be able to help you with your dating life, if you're feeling stuck or find yourself in that hamster wheel of bad dates, then give us a call.
Absolutely. And we have created an email. If you want to share any of your dating stories with us, we would love to hear them. Just email us at questions@ontheverge.com, and we would love to hear your dating stories.
Yes.
So anyway, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk more about what to expect when you get out there in the dating world. And stay tuned because Dr. Pepper is coming up at our 11:30 hour. All right. Thanks. Stay tuned on Transformation Talk Radio.
The Psychic Professor's Show, The Voices of Spirit Radio, with international medium and spirit artist Dr. Susan Barnes on Transformation Talk Radio. Featuring a variety of spiritual topics such as psychic art, spiritualism, EVP, psychic development, and mediumship. This hit call-in show provides listeners with breakthrough wisdom to enliven and enlighten their lives. Visit spiritartgallery.net for show days and times.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Time. Talk Radio.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life. Each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Disease, one of the most dreaded words in our vocabulary. Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know traditionally we have viewed disease as a degenerative process? Disease is better understood when we view it as dis-ease in the human body. Dis-ease means without ease. Health is not merely the absence of disease. It's when every part of the body works together effortlessly, relaxed and at ease. It's that relaxed state that lets energy flow in waves through and around the entire body. Every organ has an electrical charge, and when overcharged or undercharged, dis-ease occurs. And it is an effort to go through our day. We are able to determine the exact dis-ease of the body and design a specific solution to correct the nutritional imbalance. Contact us at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232. And visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
And yes, you can make it happen in love relationships. So welcome back. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to On the Verge Radio, learning how to use your breakdown for a breakthrough. We're here, your host, Laura Richer. Hi, Laura.
Hey, Andy.
And I am your co-host, Andy Lucas, and we're broadcasting here on Transformation Talk Radio. And today we are continuing our discussion about finding and maintaining fulfilling, happy love relationships. So yikes. So, Laura, after someone has kind of let go and processed a toxic love relationship, what are some things that they can expect to encounter in the dating world?
They can expect to encounter anything. So my experience, and I know yours as well, was I met some really cool people. I met some very wounded people. I met a few liars. I met a few creepy people. So there was a little bit of everything. But the trick is, when you're really solid with yourself, if you're not coming from a wounded place or looking for a Band-Aid in a relationship, you know, as a distraction.
Yes.
It really doesn't matter who you encounter. And in fact, some of my dates that could have been really negative were funny to me just because I didn't have a level of attachment to it that was causing it to be painful.
Yes. And is that kind of the trick, is to really be secure in yourself?
I really think that's the secret. You know, and of course we're human beings and we're going to experience disappointment sometimes, but it's not, you can get over a bad date. It's not going to be the end of the world for you. But it does feel like the end of the world when you are really attached to the outcome, like you said, when you're showing up going, oh my gosh, is this going to be my next boyfriend or my husband or the father of my children or whatever you're looking for?
Yes.
And you put so much expectation on it. When it doesn't go well, then of course you feel disappointed. So.
Exactly. Amy Spiegel, she wrote the book Letting Go of Perfect Women, Expectations and Authenticity. And she says, don't marry an orange, or in this case, date an orange, and expect him to turn into an apple. If you want an orange, great. But if not, put him back in the proverbial fruit bowl for someone else to enjoy and move on.
Yes.
And it's true. We just can't go out there expecting to meet whoever these people are and turn them into who we want them to be.
Yes. And that's really not fair to them either. And we talked about that a little bit in our last episode, that trying to change someone is really a disservice to them and to you. So you just want to connect with the people that are going to work for you. And they're out there as long as you create space for them in your life and don't attach to an orange when you really want an apple.
Exactly. Or a blueberry.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, who knows? Whatever
kind of fruit you're into.
So tell us some things that new daters should remember or kind of keep in mind.
I think what I see when I work with women in my practice is this pressure that we put on ourselves and this expectation, I've got to meet somebody before I'm 40, I've got to get married before I'm 30, sets you up to overlook red flags sometimes. Uh-huh. So there are the people that are too picky, and that's a whole different story to talk about. But I think what I see more common is people are overlooking things that don't work for them and just hoping that they can create a relationship with this person so that they'll be who they're imagining them to be, when that's not really right. who they are at all. So trusting your instincts is, I think, a huge one. And I think for me, when I first started dating, I was kind of naive. I missed the whole online dating thing when I was younger, so I didn't really know what to expect.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I think people always showed me who they were, and I really could evaluate pretty quickly up front whether that was a person that would work or wouldn't work. But sometimes I thought, well, I need to be more open-minded or give people a chance. And that, for me, personally, always backfired. I don't know. Yes. What about you?
Oh, my gosh. If you're not listening to your instincts, you're turning off this part of you, your gut reaction that's telling you everything you need to know. Mm-hmm. I went on, in my dating horror life, it wasn't so bad. It doesn't have to be awful, as we've said. But I was fairly new to the process, and I had met this gentleman. We'll call him Arthur.
Okay.
We had gone on it was our third date, and in the middle of the third date, he asked me to be exclusive. And I was totally taken aback. It was completely shocking to me because it just felt like it was so soon. And my gut reaction was, no, that's too much pressure. I don't want to do that.
Because you barely knew him.
It was the middle of our third date.
Right.
And so, because I didn't want to hurt his feelings or potentially turn away something that could have been great, I said, okay. And oddly enough, the next day when I was sharing this with my mom, I started crying. Now, that should have been
a sign
that this was not a good move. Our fourth date, he came over to my house, and I was making dinner. And he arrived and had several bags of things. Now, this person had an apartment, a nice car, a well-paying job. Like, it was just strange. And he brought a lot of food over. He asked if he could take a shower, and he brought this special soap. He had a change of clothes.
He was moving in.
He was essentially moving in on our fourth date. I was like, no. It felt like the walls were closing in on me. I couldn't breathe, and I had to end it immediately. Mm-hmm. And so I wish I had just paid attention to my instincts at the beginning, and when he asked to be exclusive in the middle of the third date, I would have said no.
Yes.
Yes. So, yes, trust your instincts.
But not really too much damage done. You didn't go down a long road with him.
No, but I still get a chill up my spine whenever I think of it. What about tolerating bad behavior? You kind of mentioned that. Like, those are some red flags.
Well, so everyone probably has a different definition of bad behavior. One example I have from my dating experience is when I met someone online, and they had been kind of more forward than I appreciate, and they had made some comments that kind of set up a red flag for me, saying, like, this person might be looking something different than me.
Yeah.
They were also very recently divorced, like within the week. And so that was also kind of a red flag. But, you know,
that's fast.
Yeah.
Even for me thinking, I just perked my eyes and ears right. I'm like, wow, you're just ready to get back in there, aren't you?
And he was ready. So, but he had sent me a text that it was very kind of sexually forward, and I didn't really appreciate it, but I just kind of overlooked it and went forward. So I did go on a date with him. We had dinner. It was nice. Everything went fine. And then the next day I just got this barrage of sexting from him. It was very bizarre. And I thought, and no harm done. I wasn't, you know, I was in a good place with myself. It didn't make me feel defeated or hurt my feelings. But I thought, wow, I saw who that person was right in the beginning, and I chose to overlook it.
Correct.
And I could have skipped this experience. But now, yes, I know I can trust my instincts.
Absolutely.
So, and there's nothing wrong. If you want to be sexting, that's great. Everyone should do what they're interested in. It's just that was not for me. That was moving a little too quickly and too much pressure.
Exactly. For a second date. The day after a first date.
The day after a first date. Yeah, there was no second date.
No. No, of course not. I also think that drinking too much can be some bad behavior that we choose to ignore when someone gets sloppy drunk on a date.
Yes.
Is not great.
Well, I think that person is giving you some information. And again, if we're trying to let things slide, we might say, like, oh, maybe they had a bad night. But you can probably trust if they're going to act that way the first time that they meet you.
Yes.
And as you know, you had to come rescue me from a date.
Got an urgent text. Andy, you have to come out here. This person, not good.
Yeah, we had to. It took two of us to get him in an Uber and get him back.
From what I remember, he planned a date with you on a day that he was going to be out on a boat with friends drinking all day.
Right, like, which didn't work for me. That wasn't behavior I was looking for.
He passed out at the table several times while we were there. And then was going to drive home, and we had to push him into
the Uber. Where do you find these guys?
Tinder. I mean, yeah.
Oh, well, okay, that explains it right there. Okay, never mind.
Now, let me just say this, though, because we're telling some of our funny stories. We did go on some very nice dates with lovely people that, not together, we didn't.
No.
Yeah. That, you know, maybe there just wasn't chemistry, but I had some really pleasant dating, and I met some very nice people. So it wasn't all bad, but.
No, it wasn't all bad. These are just.
But these are just examples of things that you don't want to overlook.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So what about, like, another, to me, bad behavior that we kind of look over or overlook is not calling when they say they are, being excessively late. Oh, my gosh, that one guy who kept every 10 minutes would text, can we push it back 10 minutes? Can we And finally it had been an hour and a half, and then I was sitting there waiting for him, and then he texted and said, I'm going to be an hour late. Like, just forget it.
Yeah.
Just forget it.
I wouldn't even hold on that long.
I don't. Well, they.
You're nice. That's what
there was an absent thing going on, and I liked. Okay. I wanted to try the sugar cubes. Okay. It was just like a different kind of thing that I wanted to. You know,
so that's
see
a whole other
do.
Problem that's going on.
Another, I think, another reason why people tend to overlook this stuff is this word that we've talked about, this dreaded L word, loneliness. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this on the last episode that it can be one of the reasons that we attract and stay in a toxic relationship. So, what is loneliness?
I was reading a book by Brené Brown called Braving the Wilderness, which is a really great book. And she talks about loneliness, meaning that you feel like you're not part of a group that you want to belong to. And that kind of resonated with me. I thought about, you know, when I was divorced and in my late 30s and I, you know, all my family's married and a lot of my friends are married. And I really just felt excluded from a couple, you mm-hmm. know, and that kind of made me have a sense of not belonging.
Yeah.
So that could be a reason. Another thing for me that loneliness has always been is a fear around focusing on my own goals and doing things for myself. So it's just that I want to achieve. And so it felt easier to just focus on another person. And if that other person wasn't there, then I felt lonely because I had to focus on my own fears of accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah.
So I think loneliness is kind of an interesting emotion because there can be so many things underneath it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's never really the fear of being alone.
Yeah,
it's the fear of being alone with your thoughts.
And I ask people, my clients all the time, well, when you say you feel lonely, do you feel you don't like being alone? And they'll say, oh, no, I love spending time by myself.
Yeah.
So it usually is not that.
It's not that. Yeah. All right. So we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we are going to be joined by Dr. Pepper Schwartz. We're so excited about this. We're married at first sight. She's going to be giving us some great tips for finding and maintaining healthy love relationships.
Can't wait.
Stay tuned for more On the Verge Radio here on Transformation Talk Radio.
By letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old. I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
Integrate spirituality into your everyday lives on Universe Soul Heart Radio. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Kathleen Johnson explores the concept of sensible spirituality, keeping you grounded, connected, and centered on the path to wholeness. Kathleen has dedicated her life to facilitating holistic healing and wholeness in others. Listen to Universe Soul Heart Radio and learn how to flourish, grow, and impact all we do on planet Earth. For more information, go to universesoulheart.net.
The Knowledge Book, currently studied in 39 countries and 15 languages around the world, accelerates our evolution, takes us out of depression, offers universal truth, protects us, and makes us stronger, both spiritually and physically. So if you are interested in the Knowledge Book, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Have you ever said to a friend, "I am trying to be less stressed. I am hoping to meet someone special." Or how about, "I am working on getting a job I love." Hi, I'm Eve from Elite Tarot, host of the weekly show Mainstream Metaphysics Radio. Words like hoping, wanting, and trying may seem innocent. However, they carry with them emotional weight that actually blocks energy. Next time you start to say these words, say instead, "I am becoming less stressed. I am looking forward to meeting someone special. I am pursuing a job I love." While your brain may resist, note how your body physically feels as possibility of success suddenly appears. As an intuitive coach and professional tarot card reader, I work with clients worldwide on using energy effectively to embrace joy. If you'd like to schedule a session, please visit my website at elitetarot.com. That's ElitetarotT.com.
Welcome back to On the Verge Radio here on Transformation Talk Radio. And we are talking about falling in love and how exciting this can be. And just to kind of set the stage, toward the end of November 2015, my mom had knee surgery and she happened upon a show while she was recovering called Married at First Sight. It was in its third season. The show has three experts who kind of match up three couples based on personality traits, age, wants, desires, goals, family, lifestyle. And these couples meet each other at the altar and truly get married and have a legally binding marriage. They go through all the steps. They go on a honeymoon. They move in together. They have daily life together. And after 8 weeks, they decide if they want to stay married or get a divorce. And it is fascinating. I immediately binge watched seasons one and seasons two. I got Laura here hooked on watching season three with me. And it really kind of helped us see that we were not alone in this dating situation.
Yes. And it was interesting to see that there were so many people that were willing to just put it in the hands of experts and didn't even want to deal with it anymore. So that did make us feel better. And it gave us some really good advice.
Yes.
So now I am so thrilled to introduce Dr. Pepper, who's in the studio with us today. And Dr. Pepper has had a 40-year career talking about love and commitment. She's currently the love and relationship expert and ambassador for AARP. And she teaches at the University of Washington. And she's one of the experts at Married at First Sight. So welcome, Dr. Pepper. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, this is super exciting. So as you know, Laura and I are huge fans of the show, and it set us both on a trajectory to find happy love relationships. Both of us have found these really nice gentlemen that we've been involved with each for about a year now, and it was really great watching the show and getting your advice. So I'm curious, how many people kind of showed up for the pilot, the first season versus now? And I know you guys are filming in Boston.
Well, they're very different because the first season, we weren't sure anyone would do this. You know, I mean, it is kind of a bold idea. And so actually we tricked them. We did a casting call for a dating show. And we got, you know, I don't know how many people, a couple hundred people who came. This was in L.A. I mean, there was more than that, but that's because there's always a lot of people applying, but about a couple hundred that we actually got to see. And then we told them, well, it's not a dating show. This is something else, and it's a marriage show, and we will arrange a marriage for you, and you will meet that person at the altar. Whereupon, quite a few people got up and left.
I can imagine.
Guy, there's this handsome Japanese guy. I thought, he was out of there. So so we were left with about 100 people. And we had some wonderful people in that first mm-hmm. season. Two out of those three couples are still married.
I know. It is so exciting.
And we just had our first baby.
Yes,
Jamie just had a baby. Yeah. So that was, you know, kind of cobbling it together. We are now over 50,000 people.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, that, in fact, I'm sure it's higher than that now. That was sort of months ago that I looked.
So is it shocking or surprising or both that there's that many people who are interested in letting experts find them a spouse and take it into their hands, take it out of their hands and put it into yours?
It was originally, but now I've learned why. And I think it's because most of the people who apply to us, not all, but most of the people who apply to us are a little burned out with their own efforts. They really don't trust themselves anymore.
Yeah.
They either have hit walls of just, you know, not finding anyone, or they've made sort of continuous bad links up with someone. You know, mm-hmm. they don't trust their own taste. And they feel, particularly those who've seen a few of our successful couples, that, you know, maybe someone would know them better than they would know themselves. And plus the fact they know that one of the really good things about this is we're there to support them.
Yes.
Pretty much night and day. Mm-hmm. We started out with four people. There's three of us now. And we're just cycling in all the time, yeah. You know. As you know, I just came from Boston yes. like an hour, not yeah. even an hour ago. And so I think it's really quite... It's a good vote of confidence, but I also think it's because they just feel like we'll do no worse than they have maybe better.
So what are the experts looking for when you go to partner somebody? What are the big things that you look for to see if somebody's compatible?
Well, it's changed for me over, you know, now our sixth season. And I think for me, mm-hmm. now we're different experts, but for me, I'm looking for someone flexible, okay. who can roll with things, who doesn't say, it's got to be X. If it's not X, I'm out of here,
yes.
right? Now, sometimes we fail on that variable because we think we have it and we don't, but I'm looking for that. I'm looking for a big heart. Mm. I want somebody who can show love and receive it and who has a good head on their shoulders, you know, who is a grown-up. That, too, sounds easier than it turns out to be.
Yeah.
I'm looking for somebody who can tell me about themselves. Some people really, they don't know themselves very well. And even though we give them a lot of psychological tests and psychiatric tests and a whole lot of detective work on their education, income, criminal record, hopefully not, debt record, driving record, sometimes surprises come on those too, even though we thought we did a good job. But basically, somebody has to have a good sense of themselves, because if they don't, it's a whole lot, really a lot harder for us to do it. So those are sort of the central things. I like somebody with spirit, you know, who's enthusiastic and up for a lot. I like somebody, if I can have them, who's had a successful relationship.
Yeah.
We can't always find that, but... if they've been with somebody a couple years, it didn't work out, et cetera, and they have good reasons for that, I think, okay, they've known how to attach. They've known how to make a commitment. There's lots of good reasons why they don't work out, but mm-hmm. I'm very wary of someone who's never lived with somebody
okay.
and mm-hmm. is a grown-up or, you know, hasn't had something big that made their heart sing so they would know what that felt like, you know, yeah. even if it didn't last. So there's a bunch of stuff, but that's okay. that's kind of the center of it.
Okay. Yeah. So that kind of touches on what we were talking about when we were dating. A lot of it was a process of getting to know what we didn't want and really getting to know ourselves. And so there was a period of time when it wasn't going that smoothly because we weren't
right.
ready.
And I guess we've been talking a lot about toxic relationships over the past few episodes. And I just wonder if you are out of one of those and you've had these kind of negative relationships in the past, how do you stop yourself when you're dating from letting it haunt you and letting it affect your new relationship?
Well, I think it should affect your new relationship.
Okay.
I mean, I think you should have gained insights from it.
Mm-hmm.
You should see warning signals, not just in the other person, but in yourself.
Yes.
You know, does this person set off triggers or not? What happened? I mean, you know, no relationship repeats the last, but you always have gotten some new insight, I hope, you know?
Yeah.
And if you don't, and when we're around, we're here to tell you you don't, and you got to listen to us. And that's the other thing I would say. I mean, I would send somebody to a therapist and say, okay, here's my MO. Here's the way it's been for me. give me some insight here because I'm not getting it. I think the best thing these people get is the three of us, you know, holding them to maybe not the mirror they've been looking at.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And because I think our real role is, of course, we want them to live happily ever after. But if that doesn't happen, we want to have a much better chance of doing that because we've cleaned up their act a little.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, and I think some person, I've had a situation where someone says, well, every relationship I'm in goes blank, blank, blank. And then I go, well, what's the consistent variable in
exactly.
that?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, let's talk about, you know, what your role is so it doesn't keep happening. But I think we do want to learn. We just don't want to think it's the same relationship. And we don't want to doom it before it starts just because, you know, we're used to them ending.
Right. Yeah, just waiting for something bad to happen. Yeah.
What I would say just to say, is something bad will happen.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It will happen. It's what you do with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how you react to it and all of that.
Yeah.
What can we do, you know, for new daters or people who are finally ready to find love and they're ready to date, what can we do to show up to be a good partner? And what should we be looking for the personality traits, I guess? And I know it's different for everybody, but some kind of general ideas.
I'd say my two most serious observations. One is watch your language. Don't forecast the future. Don't tell somebody what they're going to do. You know, don't like, you know, you don't really love me, do you?
Yeah.
You don't really want a commitment, do you? you know, doing that. And then I am continuously shocked at the language people will say when they're mad. I mean, really uncivilized. And that just is no, never, don't do it. If you can't control your language, leave the room, leave the house, say I'll be back. But, you know, I mean, I think those are really, really important points. And the other one, and this is my golden rule that I've changed, but gosh, it's a hard one for people to do. I was just seeing it in action the other night, which is don't do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
Do unto others as they would have done unto themselves.
Yes, that's...
Don't think that the way you feel is going to be the way they feel. Don't think the way you perceive is the way they're going to perceive. Mm-hmm. Because if you make those assumptions or judgments, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Gosh, my mom has been telling me that my whole life. Andy, no one is going to respond like you do. Like, it's just, but we forget that. It's really easy to kind of project what I think someone's going to feel and what I think they're going to do. So,
what are some things, just more on that topic, that maybe are red flags that we don't want to overlook? We were talking a little earlier about sometimes we really have put some limits on ourselves, our age, or we need to get married at a certain point, and we're kind of ready to find that person no matter what. What do you think are some big red flags that you just really shouldn't let go?
Well, it should never be no matter what.
Okay, yeah.
Because as anyone who's ever been in a bad relationship knows, it's better to be alone watching a movie with your own bag of popcorn than having someone take you apart, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So what I would say is anybody controlling, anybody who is, it's my way or the highway. Mm. And most people aren't like that in the beginning, but when they get a little more comfortable, they do that. Mm-hmm. And because we all want our own way. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, well, you know, can we work with this? Can we negotiate? Can we get our fair share of how life looks together? So real controlling is a bad thing. Somebody who's telling you your flaws.
Mm. Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
It's another way of being controlling. You know, try to take you down just a few pegs. And this should be somebody who sees you as glorious, perhaps not perfect, but wants to build you up. They, you know, everybody says this old hackneyed phrase, but it's true. They've got your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They make you feel better and stronger and more attractive and more verbally talented. And, you know, you shine and they like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And anybody who starts to react badly when you are shining, someone you really don't want.
Yes.
Yeah, that is very true. Someone who can't, I dated someone who now lives in a van by the water. And he
said waterfront, right?
whenever something would go really well for me, he would run for the hills and was not there to support me or be proud of me. It was like this weird jealousy or couldn't handle it and
made him feel inferior in some sort of way.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very strange. So
big red flag.
Yeah, exactly. What are some, Laura and I have talked about this a lot, expectations that we have going into a relationship that I think it's okay to let go of some expectations, but there's some that can, like what are, this isn't coming out right, but what are some people expecting that they shouldn't be because it will only lead to disappointment? And then what should they stand true to? Like, this is really important to me and I can't bet.
I just heard the other day from somebody saying, I thought this was going to be a fairy tale.
Oh.
And I say, the wedding is a fairy tale. The honeymoon might be a fairy tale. After that, it's just a novel, you know? And there's lots of stuff in it, right? So I think the idea that there's no conflict, no bumps, no disappointments, any of that is going to doom a relationship because that's not the way we are. It's not the way life hands us life, and sometimes we are our best selves and sometimes we aren't, and the other person as well. So I think, you know, that's the biggest one. I think that people feel like, oh my gosh, there's some conflict, there's some big differences, this didn't happen the way I wanted to, this is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out of here. And that's just not going to work for a long-term relationship. Just even that I'm out of here is a really bad flag.
Yeah.
Because I know why people want to. They get frustrated. They get angry. And I'm not against anyone taking a time out, mind you. Give me a half hour. I'm not doing well here. In fact, I think it's a good idea. But to disappear, to not engage, to not talk, to stonewall. I love John Gottman's work. And one of his things, he says, look out at somebody who won't engage, who stonewalls, who just literally will disappear rather than deal with whatever it is. You know, those are kind of things where it's not going to work or it's not going to work well.
Mm-hmm.
So the couples that did make it on the show, and now even when a couple has a baby, what did you see? What do you see as you've seen them over the years? What are the traits that they have made their relationship successful?
It's a good question because they're so different. And, you know, I would say part of it is, you know, tongue and groove. That is to say, one person has what the other person needs, and they know it. And they're relieved to have it. For example, in the first season, Jamie and Doug, Jamie came from no family, mm-hmm. no support, just a really horrific background. And here's Doug, who's got a warm, supportive family. And they're all there for them, and they take her in. And we knew that this would be something really good for her.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is Jamie's intense and ambitious and excited. And she needed somebody who was less so, warm, supportive. In the beginning, she didn't know she needed that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
She'd been dating, you know, traders and, you know, techie, you know, people who were full of themselves. Mm-hmm. She needed to be able to shine, and she needed someone who loved that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And was there for her, and who was patient, because Jamie had to go through a lot of stuff. Jason and Courtney from that first season, Courtney's one of the most talented interpersonally talented people I have met in all the seasons. She has a good sense of what to say, when to be supportive, when to back off, and when it's time for her to get what she needs.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's, hey, some people are good swimmers, some people aren't, right?
Yes.
You know, some people are good with that kind of stuff, some people aren't. And she was also in a situation where her husband was dealing with two very stressful things. Becoming a firefighter academy, really, you know, that's hard work.
Yeah.
And full of fear in terms of whether you can make it or not, right? And then his mother was dying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she was there, and she was very, very good at knowing when to be there for him, when to be supportive, when to just listen, and to take his cues on all of this, because his ownership of some tough stuff, give him a lot of license. You know, I've seen people in similar situations with us where they start getting upset because they're not getting enough, and then they start pushing, and that's the last thing a person can handle, right? So it's having some sense of who you're with and how to treat the situation. I think that sometimes it helps a great deal if the two people look at each other and say, whoa.
Yeah.
And that helps a lot, but it doesn't forecast success. It helps, though. It gives them something, like everyone else, when you're mad at somebody, but they still kind of look good to you. You know, it helps. And so we try to match them up on that, and it's a little bit hard. We mostly are okay on it. Sometimes they're not. But again, in Jamie and Doug's case, she was miserable the first time she looked at him. And here's the guy. Here's Jamie had enough ego to not say, well, you know, up yours and the horse you rode up on, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
I mean, which we've had people feel like, you don't like the way I look?
I'm out.
That's
it.
You know, okay, I'm shutting down. Mm-hmm. If I hear that term once more, I'm shutting down.
Oh, God.
I hear that all the time. whereas Doug said, I'm going to make you think I'm great.
Yeah.
You know? And he just took it on like, he had a strong enough ego to say, she's wrong.
Yes.
I'm great. I'm going to show her, you know? So there's things like that where if people can help each other in the area they need, if they're strong in an area the other person's need, and they have enough similarities, it's got to be about 80, my own calculus is 80% similarity, 20% difference. The differences being really important and useful, the similarities thinking, yeah, this person's like me, we want to experience life in the same terms. Mm-hmm. You have to have enough reason to know why you're together, particularly if you're going to marry him at first sight.
Yes. Yeah. You know? So how do we, and this kind of goes back to Jamie, and I don't think she was doing this, but how do we how do we know the difference between being discerning about what we're looking for with someone and being overly critical and nitpicky? Like, I feel like that's kind of a fine line, or can
be. Oh, it is. It's a really great question because it's not an easy answer. What I say is you can't have too long a list.
Okay.
If you have a long list, my name for you is lonely.
Mm.
You know? Because, you know, I mean, really, it's like, how are you going to get all of it? It's not a smorgasbord. I mean, it's not a buffet where I'll take this, I'll take that, and I'll make a plate out of it. We are people, and we don't get put together like a puzzle. So the question is, what's really important, and what do you actually need, and as opposed to prefer? And what would be great, but you could live with not having it? So, I mean, for example, if you're a serious athlete, and you're running marathons all the time, and you're climbing mountains and whatever, then you have to make a decision, do I need, let's say, a woman or man who does that with me?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that something I could actually do by myself? Mm-hmm. But what I really need is somebody who is a lot of fun, insightful, smart, and has a good heart.
Yeah.
In other words, are the activities going to determine, you know, what your life is? And it might.
Mm-hmm.
It might. I mean, I'm not saying that you could go either way on that. But then, you know, how are you going to do that with what are the other things that you can get? So, you know, what are you willing to sacrifice? And if you're not willing to sacrifice most things except a few core things, it's going to be very hard.
Yes. Yeah.
And by sacrifice, I don't mean not say to yourself you don't want them, but rather, boy, it would have been great. You know, let's say I'm a serious golfer. I know I'm going to be on the links a bunch. It really would have been great to have somebody. But, you know, she's got her own thing that she does on that time, and we can come together elsewise. The activities are not insignificant because that's your leisure time. What are you going to do together? I'm not putting it down. But you just have to decide where that list has to stop. And for me, it's, you know, got four things you really need, and after that, you should just see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does age matter?
Yes. Yes, it does, occasionally not. I was very surprised with Courtney, who was just becoming 25 years old, at how talented she was. On the other hand, I've seen some people who were just too young.
Mm.
They just didn't know how stupid some of the things were that they get upset about.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you need a little bit of life to know that that's not the issue. You know, there's important things out there, but that's not one of them, right?
Right. What about education level?
I think education level isn't as important as intelligence and life experience.
Okay.
So what we often think is we're getting intelligence from education, and often they're correlated. Not always. And there are some people who who really shine that don't have all of those degrees. I think in general, it's an easy way if you were doing it sort of just like, you know, for an online dating site to kind of get a sense of somebody who would have intelligence and some broader education. But I've seen people who are very impressive who didn't do it the, you know, the usual way.
Well, Dr. Pepper, this has been so fantastic. I can't believe we only have about a minute left. I thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic. When is the new episode or the new season going to be on? Do we know yet?
New season will start in January.
Yay! I cannot wait.
It's in Boston.
We have a quick question. We're wondering if you're going to do an over 40 series at any point.
I have so tried.
Okay.
I have so tried. I tell them this all the time. They don't even, they like talk to the hand.
Yeah.
You know, so it's.
They haven't met us.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, it's true. It's true.
I think we need more help in the over 40s crowd. We've already done it wrong for a while.
Thank you.
Yeah. Exactly. I think they're going to be more flexible. You're going to know yourself better. Yes. I mean, believe me, I'm trying.
Okay,
I'm saying, couldn't we have one couple?
Yes, just one.
You know, that would be older than 40, 50, 60. I mean, people that would be poignant and interested and, I think, ready for commitment. So, you know, believe me. If it doesn't happen, it isn't because I'm not annoyingly pushy about it.
Okay. Well, we're putting our request out there. We'd love to see that.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pepper.
You're
Bye,
welcome.
Everybody.
Bye.
You've been listening to On the Verge Radio, using your breakdown for a breakthrough with Coach Laura Richer. We all have that moment in life when we are on the verge of big change. This time of transition is a wild and unknown place. How will you show up? Embrace the positive, drop the negative, and you can experience total transformation. Schedule a breakthrough session with Laura at seattlehealinghypnosis.com. Laura will help you discover the path to creating rapid and positive changes. Tune in every month for On the Verge Radio with Laura Richer.